23rd. I am restless and nervous, and for good reasons. Scribbling here keeps me quiet. This morning Mr. Sloane is better, feeble and uncertain in mind, but unmistakably on the rise. I may confess now that I feel relieved of a horrid burden. Last night I hardly slept a wink. I lay awake, listening to the pendulum of my clock. It seemed to say, "He lives, he dies." I fully expected to hear it stop suddenly at "dies." But it kept going all the morning, and to a decidedly more lively tune. In the afternoon the old man sent for me. I found him in his great muffled bed, with his face the colour of damp chalk, and his eyes glowing faintly like torches half stamped out. I was forcibly struck with the utter loneliness of his lot. For all human attendance, my villainous self grinning at his bedside, and old Robert without, listening, doubtless, at the keyhole. The bonhomme stared at me stupidly, then seemed to know me, and greeted me with a sickly smile. It was some moments before he was able to speak. Page 22. At last he faintly bade me to descend into the library, open the secret drawer on the secretary, which he contrived to direct me how to do, possess myself of his will, and burn it up. He appears to have forgotten his having taken it out night before last. I told him that I had an insurmountable aversion to any personal dealings with a document. He smiled, patted the back of my hand, and requested me, in that case, to get it, at least, and bring it to him. I couldn't deny him that favour. No, I couldn't, indeed. I went down to the library, therefore, and on entering the room found Theodore standing by the fireplace with a bundle of papers. The secretary was open. I stood still, looking from the violated cabinet to the documents in his hand. Among them I recognised, by its shape and size, the paper of which I had intended to possess myself. Without delay I walked straight up to him. He looked surprised, but not confused. "I'm afraid I shall have to trouble you to surrender one of those papers," I said. "Surrender, Maximus? To anything of your own you are perfectly welcome. I didn't know that you made use of Mr. Sloane's secretary. I was looking for some pages of notes which I have made myself, and in which I conceive I have a property." "This is what I want, Theodore," I said, and drew the will unfolded from beneath his hands. As I did so, his eye fell upon the superscription, "Last Will and Testament, March, F. S." He flushed an extraordinary crimson. Our eyes met. Somehow, I don't know how or why, or for what matter, why not, I burst into a violent peal of laughter. Theodore stood staring, with two hot, bitter tears in his eyes. "Of course you think I came to ferret out that thing," he said. I shrugged my shoulders, those of my body only. I confess, morally, I was on my knees with contrition, but there was a fascination in it, a fatality. I remembered that in the hurry of my movements the other evening I had slipped the will simply into one of the outer drawers of the cabinet among Theodore's own papers. "Mr. Sloane sent me for it," I remarked. "Very good. I'm glad to hear he's well enough to think of such things." "He means to destroy it." "I hope, then, he has another maid." "Mentally, I suppose he has." "Unfortunately, his weakness isn't mental, or exclusively so." "Oh, he will live to make a dozen more," I said. Page 23. "Do you know the purport of this one?" Theodore's colour by this time had died away into plain white. He shook his head. The doggedness of the movement provoked me, and I wished to arouse his curiosity. "I have his commission to destroy it." Theodore smiled very grandly. "It's not a task I envy you," he said. "I should think not, especially if you knew the import of the will." He stood with folded arms, regarding me with his cold, detached eyes. I couldn't stand it. "Come, it's your property. You are sole legatee. I give it up to you." And I thrust the paper into his hand. He received it mechanically. But, after a pause, bethinking himself, he unfolded it and cast his eyes over the contents. Then he slowly smoothed it together and held it a moment with a tremulous hand. "You say that Mr. Sloane directed you to destroy it?" he finally inquired.
"I say so."
"And that you know the contents?"
"Exactly."
"And that you were about to do what he asked you?"
"On the contrary, I declined."
Theodore fixed his eyes for a moment on the superscription and then raised them again to my face. "Thank you, Max," he said. "You have left me a real satisfaction." He tore the sheet across and threw the bits into the fire. We stood watching them burn.
"Now he can make another," said Theodore.
20 others," I replied.
"No," said Theodore, "you will take care of that."
"You are very bitter," I said sharply enough.
"No, I am perfectly indifferent. Farewell."
And he put out his hand.
"Are you going away?"
"Of course I am. Goodbye."
"Goodbye, then, but isn't your departure rather sudden?"
Page 24.
"I ought to have gone 3 weeks ago. 3 weeks ago."
I had taken his hand. He pulled it away. His voice was trembling. There were tears in it.
"Is that indifference?" I asked.
"It's something you'll never know," he cried. "It's shame.
I'm not sorry that you should see what I feel. It will suggest to you, perhaps, that my heart has never been in this filthy contest. Let me assure you, at any rate, that it hasn't. That it has had nothing but scorn for the base perversion of my pride and my ambition. I could easily shed tears of joy at their return, the return of the prodigals. Tears of sorrow, sorrow."
He was unable to go on. He sank into a chair, covering his face with his hands.
"For God's sake, stick to the joy," I exclaimed.
He rose to his feet again. "Well," he said, "it was for your sake that I parted with my self-respect. With your assistance, I recover it."
"How for my sake?"
"For whom but you would I have gone as far as I did? For what other purpose than that of keeping our friendship whole would I have borne your company into this narrow pass? A man whom I cared for less I would long since have parted with. You were needed. You and something you have about you that always takes me so to bring me to this. You ennobled, exalted, enchanted the struggle. I did value my prospect of coming into Mr. Sloane's property. I valued it for my poor sister's sake, as well as for my own, so long as it was the natural reward for conscientious service, and not the price of hypocrisy and cunning. With another man than you, I never would have contested such a price. But you fascinated me, even as my rival. You played with me, deceived me, betrayed me. I held my ground, hoping you would see that what you were doing was not fair. But if you have seen it, it has made no difference with you. For Mr. Sloane, from the moment that, under your magical influence, he revealed his nasty little nature, I had nothing but contempt."
"And for me now?"
"Don't ask me. I don't trust myself."
"Hate, I suppose."
"Is that the best you can imagine? Farewell."
Page 25. "Is this a serious farewell, farewell forever?"
"How can there be any other?"
"I'm sorry that this should be your point of view. It's characteristic. All the more reason that I should say a word in self-defense. You accuse me of having played with you, deceived you, betrayed you. It seems to me that you are quite beside the mark. You say you were such a friend of mine. If so, you ought to be one still. It was not to my fine sentiments you attached yourself, for I never had any or pretended to any. In anything I have done recently, therefore, there has been no inconsistency. I never pretended to take one's friendship so seriously. I don't understand the word in the sense you attach to it. I don't understand the feeling of affection between men. To me, it means quite another thing. You give it a meaning of your own. You enjoy the profit of your invention. It's no more than just that you should pay the penalty. Only, it seems to me rather hard that I should pay for it.
Theodore remained silent, but he looked quite sick.
Is it still a serious farewell? I went on. It seems a pity. After this clearing up, it appears to me that I shall be on better terms with you. No man can have a deeper appreciation of your excellent parts, a keener enjoyment of your society, and I should very much regret the loss of it.
Have we, then, all this while understood each other so little? Said Theodore.
Don't say we and each other. I think I have understood you.
Very likely. It's not for my having kept anything back.
Well, I do you justice. To me you have always been over-generous. Try now and be just.
Still he stood silent with his cold, hard frown. It was plain that, if he was to come back to me, it would be from the other world, if there were one. What was he going to answer, I know not. The door opened and Robert appeared, pale, trembling, his eyes starting in his head.
"I verily believe that poor Mr. Sloane is dead in his bed," he cried.
There was a moment of perfect silence.
"Amen," said I. "Yes, old boy, try and be just."
Mr. Sloane had quietly died in my absence.